Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football, and I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We are back with another loaded show. Today, we'll recap a crazy week one in college football. We'll give out this week's helmet stickers, talk about some of our favorite matchups in week one of the NFL, and we'll wrap our divisional previews with the NFC and AFC South divisions. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, man, Brad, as we're recording this, you'll be listening to this, and then you'll be getting your wings, chips, dip, and everything ready for Thursday night football, Detroit versus Kansas City. Can't wait for it. We're finally here. The summer is officially over, and the real season is beginning.
So excited, man. I can't wait. This is a big matchup. We're going to talk about some of our favorite week one matchups here a little bit later in the show. Week one in college football was awesome. College football has started off with a bang. Love what I've seen so far. We're going to talk about some of the big games, some of the upsets, and some of the craziness we saw in week one. A lot to get to. And like I said, we're going to wrap up our division previews as well. One bit of news that just broke before we went to record here, Alex, you brought it to my attention. The reigning Heisman, heavy favorite to be the number one overall pick, Caleb Williams. There's reports now that have come out that says his father said, quote, no lock that USC quarterback Caleb Williams is going to declare for this year's NFL draft. What do you make of this story, Alex?
Interesting. We've seen this a few times, most notably with John Elway and Eli Manning. But as we've been talking about, and you know, you can start at the beginning of this pod, we probably were the first, or you know, this podcast was the first when we talked about how I felt about the Cardinals when I said I feel like they're going to tank, and how dysfunctional that organization is. I can understand why he wouldn't want to go there and perhaps return for another year and take another chance at going at number one. And again, it is a chance, but it'd be very interesting to see if he makes this type of decision. Now, remember, it's not as hard as it used to be because Caleb Williams will be a person that will easily be able to find an NIL deal to supplement his income during that point in time. So it's not like I have to leave for the money. So he actually does have options here.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Alex. That's a great point about the NIL, by the way, too, because watching college football this weekend, I know you probably saw it, but I saw several different times that new Dr. Pepper ad with Caleb Williams being featured in it. So I know he's already getting paid right now, and it's a different era because of that. And I don't blame him if he decides that he doesn't want to play for this tire fire franchise that is the Arizona Cardinals. They've been a mess, and they've been a mess for a while now. It feels like they have no direction. I would not blame him at all if he did pull an Eli or a John Elway and said, look, I'm not playing for you guys. I said it last week. Alex, you were all over it, like you said. You talked about this months ago, about the possibility of them essentially tanking and sitting Kyler Murray for the year, because I think we all know they want to get out of that deal. They want to move on, and I think they're definitely looking at Caleb Williams. But what a fascinating story this is. This is definitely something we're going to have to track as the year goes on. Some other recent news here, Alex. Nick Bosa gets paid. I think we saw this coming. He becomes the highest paid defensive player. They get a deal done just in the nick of time for him to be ready for week one. Chris Jones still doesn't have a deal. So it looks like he's actually not going to play the season opener tonight versus the Detroit Lions. That's become a really scary situation if you're a Chiefs fan, because we know what kind of impact this guy has on the game.
Absolutely. And you know, this for betting odds, that is going to move that immensely, because both he and Travis Kelce are out. So that's going to make that game even more interesting. I'm pretty sure that'll be something we talk about later. But Chris Jones with that offensive line is going to be very interesting to look at and see what happens without that stalwart, one of the top three interior defensive linemen in the game, not be available, and their best defensive player not be available for game one. And this is the time when you can get picked off early, when it's early in the season and everybody's trying to figure everyone else out.
Yeah, it's got me thinking more and more. I'm liking the Lions more and more in this matchup because of it, because we know Detroit's O-line is one of the very best in the NFL. And if you remove Chris Jones from the middle of that defense, I think that could really open things up for Detroit to be able to run the ball tonight and play a more ball-controlled offense, set up Jared Goff for some play-action shots down the field, which we know that's really been his strength, is when you can pair his game with a strong running attack. This game just got a whole lot more interesting. We saw some awesome games. We saw some upsets, some great stuff in week one. Let's start with the biggest game of the week, Florida State. I think it's fair to say they have emerged as a potential national title contender with that impressive win over LSU after a really close first half. I mean, this looked like it was going to be a down-to-the-wire great game, but the second half, FSU completely pulled away from the Tigers. They left LSU scoreless until the very last minute of the fourth quarter, basically a junk time touchdown to make the score look more respectable. FSU scored 31 unanswered points in the second half. They were faster. They were the more physical team. They bullied LSU up front. Alex, that was eye-opening.
Absolutely. I mean, this should have been a revenge game for LSU after what happened last year. And Brian Kelly did not have this team ready to play, and it was obvious. Florida State was ready to play. They knew what they were, that LSU was coming in for a revenge game, and instead of showing up, they laid an egg, and FSU showed you who we thought they were. And now I still maintain that I have LSU. I'm not wavering off my initial pick from a few pods back that I have them in the national championship playoffs. But what I saw was FSU making a statement. LSU did not show up. This was not a competitive game. This was, I'm just going to bully you over. And those big receivers that that Florida State seems to always have, those 6'4", 6'5", 6'7", receivers just literally made LSU look slower and smaller on the field.
Speaking of a surprise blowout, how about Duke knocking off then number 9 Clemson? Alex, you said circle Clemson. You felt like this might be a team that's getting too much hype when we put out the top 25 a couple weeks ago. I was shocked by this, Alex. Now, I did mention that the line going into this game was a little closer than I expected. So Vegas clearly has a lot more respect for Duke than maybe the public did going into it. But with that being said, I don't think very many people thought that this would actually be a blowout 28-7 win by Duke. They were impressive in this game. I like what I saw from them. Didn't like what I saw from Clemson. Their quarterback, Cade Klubnik, was a guy that everyone thought we had to watch in this game. He was the guy everybody was talking about. Garrett Riley coming over, taking over for the OC position for Clemson. Everyone was thinking that it's going to be fireworks and that you've got this big-time quarterback. Clemson could be back. We're going to have to put that on hold right now because the quarterback to watch in this game was Riley Leonard. Now, I know the stats weren't that impressive, but for people who watched this game, I really like what I saw from this kid.
Yeah, this was a person that was not on my radar. I mean, most Duke quarterbacks will probably never be on my radar, but he was put on my radar recently, probably about 2 weeks before this game came up, that he was being considered to be one of the top 5 prospects coming out of the draft. But what we saw from him and what we saw from Duke as a team was players that were ready to play, and they knew how big the game was, and they were ready to stand up to it. And Riley Leonard making that big run down the sideline. And what I saw more, Duke, I give them all the credit. They won this game. However, a lot of what I saw from Clemson was a lot of very sloppy, sloppy football. Again, giving Duke credit because you do with what it is, and they did, when they turned the ball over, they did turn some of those turnovers into points. But there were just some careless turnovers. There was some fourth down stops that Clemson usually on any other day probably would get. But this was very sloppy, sloppy football by Clemson. Dabo Sweeney, he's going to clean a lot of those things up going forward. But this was sloppy football for Clemson. They gave this game away. I mean, those fumbles, they were out of position. They looked like they didn't know what was going on, and Duke took advantage of it. So kudos to Duke.
Yeah, and we know Dabo Sweeney is a great coach, but I think it's more than safe to say they got outcoached and outplayed in this game because there's a huge talent discrepancy between these two teams. Let's just look at the facts here. If you look at all the 4- and 5-star players in this matchup on the current rosters for Clemson and Duke, Clemson has 56 4- and 5-star players. Duke has 2. You want to talk about a team coming out and really making a statement win. I was really impressed, and I'm a little nervous about Clemson. Now, I'm with you. I think they'll clean it up. I think they'll look better next week, but not an impressive showing week one for the Tigers at all. Now, the game everybody is talking about, Alex, we got to jump into this one because you guys already know what I'm going to mention here. Colorado absolutely shocked the college football world on Saturday, upsetting TCU, who was number 17 to open the season, 45-42. The Buffs entered the game as a 21-point road underdog and had an impressive win over a team that was the national title runner-up. I said last week, TCU was coming into the season maybe a bit overrated, and I don't want to take anything away from what Colorado did here, but I felt like that 17 had more to do with what they did last year than what this team actually is, because they lost a lot of key players and their offensive coordinator, Garrett Riley, who I just mentioned, went to Clemson. But this is still a huge program win for Colorado and Deion Sanders. This team is fast. They're athletic. They're well-coached. How much noise are they going to make this year, Alex? Where are your new expectations for Colorado after this win?
I never like to change my initial thought process going in, and I'm still going to stand by what I said. Now, what I did say was this does set up Colorado to go on a 3-0 run because Nebraska, they made a statement win with this game. They face Nebraska next week, which is a winnable game for them. And then they have Colorado State, which is really the only the one game of their first five games that they actually were favored in to win. So I think Deion can actually open up 3-0. Now, my number is 5. I believe we both had the same number. I'm still sticking at 5 because I think people will start to see what they're doing and start to catch up to it. But before I get into that, I don't want to go too far from what we actually saw. I watched Deion has his son do a lot of their social media and YouTube, things like that. Deion said going in, he thought they should have won by 14. And if Mr. Travis Hunter catches that touchdown pass that he dropped, that prediction that he had probably comes true. And what we saw from this team, how ready they were up for this game. TCU was ripe for the picking. I mean, TCU was another team similar to Clemson that I said they have this designation based upon the fact that it's unprecedented, the type of flipping of the roster. I believe it was 96%. They only returned five returning players to Colorado. So it was an unprecedented move. So I know Vegas was probably all over the place not knowing what TCU was, not knowing what Colorado was, but just putting more onus on TCU having been there, having more players that have played together against what Deion was bringing together. But again, to quote Deion, do you believe now? What we saw on that field, now defensively, there's a lot to be desired for. But if we just want to talk about what we saw from Shador, Travis Hunter, and the running backs that were on that team, we have to give them a lot of credit because they showed up and they showed out. I mean, an offensive onslaught from Colorado, 510 yards by Shador and 4 TDs, no picks. Again, no picks. What we saw from Dylan Edwards in the passing game out of the backfield, what we saw from Travis Hunter going both ways, Xavier Weaver, he had 4 receivers over 110 yards. They were airing it out, and I already saw that the Heisman odds, Travis Hunter is all the way up there. Shador is probably not too far behind, but we have two players on the same team. But with what Travis Hunter did, which we'll probably talk about later with stickers, wink, wink, we cannot deny what we saw offensively from Colorado. Kudos to Deion. Kudos to Colorado. I am a believer that you're going to turn this school over quicker than a lot of people thought, and you have put a lot of teams on notice because no one expected what we saw this Saturday.
No, it was big time, and there's a reason everybody is talking about this game. It was huge. Now, I want to mention something you talked about there briefly. Colorado's defense is definitely more of a work in progress than the offense. I think that much was evident. Their defense made 0 tackles for a loss against TCU. They allowed 551 yards on 6.8 yards per play. So that part of the ball, I think, still needs to improve quite a bit. But this team is explosive. And on the offensive side of the ball, it is clear that Coach Prime is turning it around quickly. Not a finished product, but I really like the early returns that we're seeing from this team. Travis Hunter, you mentioned it. He has to be the early leader for the Heisman. He caught 11 passes for 119 yards and made a ridiculously athletic red zone interception. He's a two-way star, and we have not seen anything like this in college football in a really long time. Now, a lot of people who follow the recruiting closely know this guy at one point, just a couple years ago, was the number one player in the country. He was a huge recruit that Deion landed at Jackson State and then followed him over to Colorado. So it's not a surprise what kind of athlete, what kind of player this guy is, but now we're kind of getting to see him on the national stage in a Power Five conference. And man, he showed up big in this one. You mentioned Deion's son, the quarterback, Shedeur Sanders. He went 37 for 46 for 510 yards and four touchdowns. I mean, that's a huge first game at Colorado as well. So impressed. Hats off. Deion Sanders and this program have become must watch going forward. Now, I want to jump to some other games here, Alex. Ohio State, really not impressed with what I saw from this team. A team that has national title hopes might have its worst offense in over a decade. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that, because this team, we know what kind of talent they have. We know they've got the best receiver in the game. Another guy who's probably a top five receiver in all of college football. But 23-3 against Indiana, I'm not going to hit the panic button just yet, but not an impressive win against one of the bottom tier teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what it is. So let's just talk about that. That game was close when it got to halftime before they pulled away and scored and shut them out the second half. But this game, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was 10-3. It was at least between about 7 points at halftime before they started to take over a little bit. But it wasn't a blow. It was not impressive. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because we're starting to see NIL and teams them not get every single, you know, five-star between them and Michigan that they may want, that's being spread a little bit thin. Respectfully, I have my reservations about Marvin Harrison. I believe he's been pushed up the prospect wide receiver ranking. I mean, because of his name, because of his father, I think he's being pushed up in such a way where I heard people talking about if he does it, he should be the number one overall pick. I don't believe he's of the ilk of a Calvin Johnson or a Randy Moss, where he displaying that amount of talent on the field. So I am reserved a little bit on him. I think he'll be a good receiver. I don't think he's at that top echelon. Ohio State, another team I did not mention because I didn't take a real close look at them the way I felt about Clemson, the way I felt about TCU, but we might need to put them in there as well, as they may get picked off at some point in time during the season by a team that we're not looking at. Something's missing. I don't know if it's the coaching. There's something that's not clicking with this team. And I believe Marvin Harrison Jr. got hurt this game. If this is something that's going to linger long in the season, yeah, Ohio State's going to fall way down in the top 25 if they continue to play like this. They cannot play like this if they expect to be there at the end for the college playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially because the Big Ten has got a lot of talent. There's a lot of good teams in this conference. Penn State right now, to me, looks like the best team in this conference. Not super impressed with Michigan and especially not Ohio State. So interesting first week in that conference. I want to jump to the ACC going up against the SEC in this North Carolina, South Carolina. North Carolina, this is a big game. North Carolina, I questioned their defense last week when we talked about this game. I said, after what we saw last year, I really had some question marks on that side of the ball. We know about Drake May. We know the offense should be good. But that defense was surprisingly good. I mean, they looked really sharp. They recorded 16 tackles for a loss, and they were putting pressure on Spencer Rattler the entire game.
Absolutely. And Spencer Rattler, but actually there's the two quarterbacks in this league is two in this game are two that I talked about. I said I'm pulling back on Drake May a little bit, and I see why I did while watching this game. South Carolina was a team that I thought they were ranked 27th coming in. I thought they were a team that could take a step up and get into the top 25. Maybe there's something wrong with that South Carolina offensive line, the way you're talking about North Carolina's defensive line, or maybe North Carolina's defensive line is just something that we hadn't talked about or paid enough attention to that it was the reason that this was a dominant game by North Carolina. But Spencer Rattler, this is your year. You were a highly recruited quarterback coming out. This is your opportunity to show and prove that you belong in one of the top five picks coming out. Drake May, the same for you, because I'm up on Spencer Rattler, but I'm down on Drake May. And a lot of things that I saw from him here, there's something about Drake May. I'm telling you, watch what I'm saying. He's the number two prospect coming into the season in terms of going into the league. I don't think he will be there based upon the amazing, the great performances that we saw from a lot of the other quarterbacks, Michael Penix Jr. and those, you know, that you can probably have a few more in terms of quarterbacks, but I don't think he's going to be the number two prospect by the end of the season.
I was impressed with Alabama. Now, look, I know they didn't play a great team. They were outmatched. I get all that. But what really stood out to me was the one position that I think a lot of us were circling in the offseason, and that was the quarterback, because Nick Saban handed the QB1 job to Jalen Milroe, who was last year's backup. He was impressive in this game, 13 for 18, really efficient game, 194 yards, 3 touchdowns passing, but he showed that dual threat ability, 7 rushes, 48 yards on the ground, and 2 rushing touchdowns. He looks like he's going to be a dangerous quarterback in the SEC this year. And I see a guy who really reminds me of a guy who used to play at Alabama, Jalen Hurts. Athletic kid, good with his legs, but can make plays with his arm. I like what I saw from Milroe.
Yeah, Alabama's going to be an interesting watch this year. We need to figure out what type of team they are. I mean, they had about maybe what about 4 straight years of electrifying wide receivers that have been going into the league and then performing in the league as well. And I think that cycle has run its course, and now they're trying to figure out who they are going to be at least this season while they try and find some more of those athletes. Perhaps they're already on the team, but they may be freshmen. So this is going to be interesting to see. What Nick Saban team are we going to get? Are we going to get the explosive one that we got for the past, let's say, 5 to 6 years? Or are we going to get the old Alabama team, to your point, with Jalen Hurts, where they're a lot of ground and pound and playing defense? So I'm interested to see what type of Alabama team we're getting. But again, Jalen Milroe, a guy that's been there on the bench and been in that system for a little while with Nick Saban, he's getting his opportunity to see what type of quarterback he can be.
Before we move on here, Alex, I got to give some hats off here to Wyoming knocking off Texas Tech in a double overtime game. That game was a lot of fun to watch. Big time win for them. Anytime a group of five knocks off a Power Five team, I think it's always worth mentioning. Fresno State did it as well. They knocked off Purdue 39-35. Big time wins for those guys. Texas State with a big win over Baylor. Hats off to some of these smaller group of five schools getting big time upset wins against the Power Five. And on a side note here, Texas Tech, a team that a lot of people thought could maybe break into the top 25 early in the year. They were kind of just on the outside looking in, but Texas Tech has got Oregon at home next week. They could be in trouble, because I think that's going to be a tough matchup for these guys. It'll be interesting to see how they bounce back after that disappointing loss. So week one in the books here, Alex, time to give out some helmet stickers. Who gets your week one helmet sticker in college football?
I mean, without a doubt, number one for Bullet, Travis Hunter. 117 snaps, two-way player, basically never came off the field unless it was special teams. 11 catches for 119 yards. He actually dropped a touchdown. And so I want to say that again. He actually dropped a touchdown. Right. But he also caught a 46 yard pass for Shiloh Sanders in a critical situation in a close game to help them get in the scoring position to score again. And then we went on defense, and then he had, like you said, the athletic interception. And on that side, he also dropped an interception as well. So this is a player that literally affected both sides of the ball, where he would have had 11 catches, 119 yards and a touchdown, plus 2 interceptions on the defensive side of the ball. Probably put him clear and away the front runner for the Heisman. But we also know, and we can probably talk about it, maybe not today, given everything that we have to talk about, but at some point in time, and we've talked about it off air, they're going to have to figure out between Deion and Travis Hunter, who is he? Because obviously he cannot continue. This is not high school football where you can, you know, play Iron Man football all the way through. Is he a wide receiver or is he a cornerback? What is the best thing for him? And what is the best thing for the team? That's going to be an interesting discussion as the season progresses, because he cannot continue with that level of snap count and still be effective throughout this entire season.
Gosh, I hope he does, though. I hope he does, because how fun was it to watch this guy? Man, oh, man. We just haven't seen anything like this in so long. I had to think about it. I remember Miles Jack at UCLA playing both ways, starting linebacker and a starting running back for the Bruins. He was a big-time player. Obviously, he just retired recently, actually, after a long NFL career at linebacker. But it's just so rare to see a guy at the highest levels of college football playing at such a high level on both sides, and it's so fun to watch. I selfishly, as a fan, I hope they just let him continue to play on both sides of the ball, because what a treat that was to watch him. My helmet sticker has to go to Colorado's quarterback, Shedeur Sanders. I mean, look, this was the biggest game of the week. There's no doubt about it. This was the most shocking win in a lot of ways, and probably the most impressive game just because of the things we talked about with this program, all the new faces, all the turnover, the new coaching staff, all the hype around Coach Prime and this team. And they delivered in a big time way. And a lot of it had to do with Deion's son at quarterback. Like we mentioned, over 500 yards and 4 touchdowns. So impressive. And on a side note here, hats off to Coach Prime, because this team played such a clean game, not a single penalty in this ball game. They played that offense at a hyper speed and they were crisp. They were sharp. Hats off to Colorado once again. No doubt that these two guys deserve the helmet stickers this week.
And just real quick, I'm glad you really mentioned no penalties. Let's remember that game was that was not a home game for Colorado. So that's a very key point to point out.
Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Hey there, PGF Nation. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. NFL Week 1 starts tonight. My goodness, Alex, this is going to be so much fun. So excited for the National Football League to be back. I thought it'd be fun to just kind of look at some of our favorite Week 1 matchups here. Alex, what is the game that you're really circling here? Because there's a lot of good ones. When you go through the schedule, there's a lot of games here that have exciting storylines, exciting matchups. What game for you is must watch?
It's going to shock you. Maybe not so much, but it's Cincinnati versus Cleveland. Why? Because last year when Joe Burrow had the appendectomy, he started out slow. We saw a terrible game by him and Cincinnati that game won, I believe 5 interceptions by Pittsburgh, and they lost, and they started out slow before they geared back up. Same thing here. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow. Poor Joe Burrow is doing everything that he's been doing since he's been playing in the league. He's either gotten hurt and then haven't been able to finish the season, or he hasn't even been able to ever have a full training camp. So here we go again, same situation, coming in, going to be rusty, coming into a game with that Cleveland defensive line, even though Cincinnati's offensive line has been bolstered by adding Orlando Brown. But again, just looking at the history of what they did last year, starting out slow. And then also on the other side of that, we have to see what does that Cleveland offense look like. We talked about it a few pods ago. We feel that Kevin Stefanski's chair could start to heat up because of the contract and the way Deshaun Watson's contract is set up. So there's going to be expectation on this team with the weapons they got, with the defense they have, and now finally having the quarterback and especially that running back. So I'm interested to see how both sides in terms of their offense plays to see if they can show up. Can Joe Burrow knock off the rust early and have a good game? And what is Deshaun Watson? Is he the Deshaun Watson of 2020 or is he the Deshaun Watson of 2022? So that is a key game that I'm interested to see.
Man, that's such a sneaky good matchup, man. Such a good matchup. AFC North rivals, two teams with big expectations, but for different reasons, and you hit on it. The Bengals are a legit Super Bowl contender. The Browns feel like they should be. They felt like they were a quarterback away. That's why they made the big aggressive move to go and get Deshaun Watson. Now it's time to see if it pays off. If the Browns finish fourth in this division and miss the playoffs like we predicted them to, I don't think it's going to cut it in Cleveland, and I think we're going to see some changes. So getting off to a good start, getting off to a fast start week one could go a long ways in this division matchup. I love that pick, Alex. I've got a divisional matchup here. This is low-hanging fruit, okay? I admit it, but I can't wait for this game. Monday Night Football, Bills, Jets. This game is going to be so fun to watch. The debut of Aaron Rodgers, of course, for the New York Jets. Big-time AFC East matchup. Josh Allen, the defending division champs, they have run this division now for three straight years. Here come the Jets trying to come in and take over the division. Monday Night Football, MetLife Stadium. This is one of the best games of the week. Jets defense, the storyline is Aaron Rodgers. The storyline is going to be the quarterbacks in that matchup, and I get it. But the Jets defense is legit. Everything I've seen tells me that this is going to be a really, really special group. I think they could be the best defense in the NFL when it's all said and done.
Yeah, this Bills Jets game, you all know and everybody knows, I've been saying it since the end of the season last season, the Bills will not make the playoffs this year. Statement game for the Jets. Go out there and show them who you are and make a statement and bury them. Put their face in the dirt, as the rappers say. So we already know they know how to deal with Stephon Diggs. They know what to do. They kind of have a line on how to shut them down. They're going to play tough. And as we saw, even in preseason, even with their starters on the field, Josh Allen and that offensive line had a hard time giving him time to do a lot of the things that he needed to do to matriculate the ball down the field and get them in the scoring position. He had a hard time doing that against the backups of Pittsburgh. With this Jets defense, which I believe is better than Pittsburgh, they're coming in, they're going to be hungry, they're going to want to make a statement, and I think this is going to be an early season statement game for them and going to put the Bills into a tailspin. They start out 0-2, 0-3. That Stephon Diggs little murmur, that was a little murmur, and I've been saying it, he will not be on that team going into the 2024 season. That murmur is going to start to get loud, and there's going to be some dissension in the ranks. So watch this game, watch what happens to Stephon Diggs, watch that offensive line, and let's see what Josh Allen can do. There's more to me. There's more pressure on the Bills to win this game than it is the Jets. And that's just how I look at it, because everybody else feels the Bills are in a Super Bowl bubble. I do not. Great game to pick. Great game to watch. I'll be tuned in for this. Few other games, we don't have to get in depth about it. I mean, I'm interested to see Carolina and Atlanta. Obviously, I would just want to see Bijan and Bryce Young to see how they do. Also, I'm interested in Jacksonville and Indianapolis, obviously, to see Anthony Richardson, but also want to see how that Jacksonville new look offense is going to look with Calvin Ridley inserted. And then another one, I just want to add one more, San Francisco and Pittsburgh. This is going to be an interesting game. I'll just talk about it for 1 second. I have Pittsburgh in this game. But San Francisco, whoa. I said before, and I said it early in the pod, in one of the pods again, I love referencing our pods because you need to go back and listen to what we said. So when we bring it forward, you can't say, oh, we didn't know and you guys are just jumping in. No, we were on this early. I said Brock Purdy wasn't going to be ready for the season. He did show me in the preseason game he was ready for the season, but here's what I saw and here's what I heard from Kyle Shanahan. Holding him out of practice, talking about arm fatigue. He didn't play the entire preseason. He only played one game. What is the arm fatigue about before we get to week one? This is going to be something that you're going to want to pay attention to with that Pittsburgh defense that's strong and that weak San Francisco offensive line that I pointed out when I said why they won't win the division. Because outside of Trent Williams, the right side of that line is very weak. And if Pittsburgh decides to move TJ Watt around, they're going to have a lot of problems and Brock Purdy's going to get hit. I'm going to make a prediction real quick, and I know I'm going long. We're going to see Sam Darnold this season. I don't know what week, but we're going to see. I don't think Brock Purdy is going to finish this season. I think Darnold is going to be the quarterback to finish this season. I felt it always before, and I always say, I don't like Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch. And again, I realize I'm going long, but that is something that you're going to have. We are going to have to pay attention to. This is going to be a very interesting year for the San Francisco 49ers.
Wow. Wow, Alex, I didn't expect you to pick that game. I'm on the opposite side of that one. I don't like this matchup for Pittsburgh. I know Pittsburgh improved that offensive line, but that defensive front for San Francisco is going to have a heyday. And I think Kenny Pickett and Najee Harris are going to be in big trouble trying to move the ball. I think it's going to be a struggle. I don't care if it's Sam Darnold. I don't care who's playing quarterback. I've got the Niners big in this one. I think they cruise. I do like the bold take, though. Couple other games that I'm interested in. Eagles-Patriots. Eagles at New England. Your New England Patriots, Alex. And I say that tongue-in-cheek here because I know you love this team. You love what they've done this offseason. This is a fun matchup going against the NFC, defending NFC champs. I think this could be a good game to watch. The other game that I think is a sneaky under-the-radar game, Raiders-Broncos. I'm excited to see this. I'm excited to see the first game with Russell Wilson and Sean Payton. What can this offense do? It looked a little clunky in preseason, so I'm kind of curious to see how that looks. But week one is loaded with fun matchups. All right, we're going to wrap up our divisional previews here. We're going to do the NFC and AFC South divisions to get you guys ready for the NFL season. Been a lot of fun doing these, Alex. Time to wrap it up, though. Let's start with the Houston Texans in the AFC South. DeMeco Ryans was the 2006 NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year for the Houston Texans. Now he's the head coach of the Texans. This guy did a great job as the Niners defensive coordinator. This team is in a full rebuild right now, but I really like this hire, Alex.
Yeah, I have the we can just start out right away. I had the Texans finishing last. I mean, they made a bold move. Getting up, I mean, Madden-type move. I love referencing Madden because these are things that only happen in Madden, but back-to-back picks at the 2 and 3 slots, getting C.J. Stroud, and then getting Will Anderson from Alabama. I believe DeMeco Ryans will have this defense up. I think we're both in agreement what we like, what we saw from Jalen Petrie and Stingley last year, and that defensive backfield looks like it's going to be something. You add Will Anderson as a pass rusher, so I think he's going to be able to generate some things over there. However, I am not moving off my point. Sorry, Ohio State fans, and sorry for Texans fans. Until an Ohio State player, a quarterback, can come in this league and show me something, I don't think C.J. Stroud is it, and I think you're going to be looking for another quarterback in about 3 years if you're going to try and really build something around him. I don't believe he has the traits. I don't believe he's the guy that can lead an organization that is kind of down and trying to come back up. I don't think he's equipped to do so. He's a trailer, not a truck, but most quarterbacks are trailers, not trucks. But he really needs somebody with a strong engine in order to pull the trailer that needs to get this team out of where it's at. So unfortunately, I see you in this position for a while, and hopefully that the Texans stick with DeMeco Ryans and they give him a shot with another quarterback, because I'm just going on record now. I don't believe C.J. Stroud is a guy.
I've got question marks about Stroud too. Obviously, their top picks was Stroud and Will Anderson Jr. You're right. That was Madden-esque, if you will. They traded up to that third pick to take those guys back-to-back. These guys essentially are going to play a big role in the future of this franchise moving forward. Go back to our NFL draft episodes if you want to get our thoughts and breakdowns of their games. There's a buzz in Houston, though. There's a buzz that I think has been missing for the past few years. And when you look at their schedule, they have games against Indy, Carolina, Tampa Bay, Arizona, Denver, Atlanta, and New Orleans. I think those are all winnable games. this team added Robert Woods at wide receiver. I think it's a solid pickup. Safety Jimmy Ward, defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins, and tight end Dalton Schultz were all kind of key players that they brought in this year. I like those moves. I like what you mentioned about Derek Stingley Jr. and Jalen Petrie, because I think those two guys are going to be key. If they could take another step forward this year in that secondary with D'Amico Ryans really putting his fingerprints on that side of the ball, I think that this could be a bit of a surprise team, Alex. I have them finishing second in this division. I think they're going to shock some people. Now, there's a caveat here. The division's not very good. So I still think they're probably a 6 or 7 win team, and I think that's going to be good enough to finish second, surprisingly. So I'm not saying they're going to be great. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs or anything like that, but I think they're going to take a step forward here because I like this coach and I like some of your young pieces here. I do have my question marks about Stroud with Damian Pierce, what he did last year, and some of these young defensive players. I think they're going to take a step up this year and be a much more competitive team than they were the year before. Let's jump to the pick that I think has to be the heavy favorite to win this division, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, the Jags finished the year strong. Doug Peterson's first year as the head coach. They made the playoffs and advanced to the divisional rounds. Now, they added running back D'Ernest Johnson, wide receiver Calvin Ridley, who's coming off that suspension. We know he can be a big-time impact player on the offense. And they drafted offensive tackle Anton Harrison. I think he's going to have to be a pivotal starter for them on that O-line. Tight end Brenton Strange is going to add some depth to that room. And running back Tank Bigsby, a guy that I know you highlighted during the draft process. We both really like his game and what we've seen from him. What do you make of this Jags team? What are your expectations here for Peterson and Trevor Lawrence this upcoming season?
So Jags, I do have them winning the division. One of the things I want to talk about the Jaguars is going to be very interesting to watch, because something that we didn't talk about for the most part in terms of why we're so high on Jacksonville, but the one thing that we really didn't talk about was they lost their left tackle. He has been suspended, I believe, for the first 4 games of the season. So they're working. And let's also remember, they lost their right tackle from last year, who's now on Kansas City. So now, really, the only veteran on that line is Brandon Scherff. And they're working with second-year player Walker Little. Then there's Ben Bartsch, Luke Fartner, and their first-round draft pick, which I believe they reached for because of the suspension, and Antoine Harrison, who's now going to be thrust into starting at right tackle, whether he's ready or not. So this, the offensive skill players are ready to go, but that offensive line is going to be something that is going to have to be paid attention to, because I don't believe they're going to get out to the fast start that we thought they were, even though I still believe they'll win the division. But they're not going to get up to the fast start that I thought they would in this week of division. But because it's a weak division, I think they'll still be able to maybe eke out. I don't have them winning over. They can only maybe win 9 or 10 games. So this is going to be very, very close and very interesting to watch. Hopefully Trayvon Walker takes a step forward, because they do need to find, they need to get a consistent pass rush, because since Josh Allen's rookie year, he hasn't been consistent and been the pass rusher that we thought he was going to be. I like what they have at the inside linebacker and Devin Lloyd and Olukuwon. So, but Trayvon Walker needs to step it up this year and be able to apply a lot of the pressure and or sacks so that this defense can slow down what's going to be happening in the beginning of the season, which is what I think you're going to see is a little bit of sloppiness from Trevor Lawrence in that offense, simply because this offensive line is so weak right now.
Yeah, it's a great point about the O-line, and I think it is a big question mark. We saw that sudden leap from Trevor Lawrence in the second half of last season. The O-line will be pivotal if he's going to continue to grow as a quarterback. But I want to talk about the defense briefly, because you mentioned them. They settled in over those final 5 weeks last season. They weren't great, but they were better. We saw some improvement from that group. But I'm with you. They need to see more from Trayvon Walker this year. Only 3.5 sacks and 49 tackles last year. He, quite frankly, did not look like a guy worthy of the first overall pick. He's going to really need to take a jump this year, because when you look at what Aiden Hutchinson did, when you look at the flashes from Kayvon Thibodeau and what he did the second half of the season for the Giants, they passed on those guys for Walker, and it's not looking good so far after 1 year. Now, they have an easy schedule, too. When you look at their schedule, it really lines up for them. When you look at some of the additions they've made And if Lawrence continues to improve like I think he will, I think they run away with this division. I think they're the clear-cut favorite for a reason. I have them winning 12 games. All right, let's jump to the Tennessee Titans here. Now, they needed to clear really what was an expensive injury-prone roster this offseason. They lost some key guys. General manager John Robinson was fired last December after reports of him losing a power struggle with head coach Mike Vrabel. And the offense completely fell apart around Derrick Henry. The trade of wide receiver A.J. Brown has really backfired. And now they bring in DeAndre Hopkins, who when he's healthy, I mean, this guy's great, but you have to wonder if his best football is behind him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know that DeAndre, this is one of the places that he came because his old offensive coordinator was here. So that's a big reason why he went there. But Ryan Tannehill is your quarterback. There's a lot to be desired. They drafted Malik Willis the year before, and then they now have drafted Will Levis, who did not look good in preseason, who I did not think was a guy coming out of college. So he's exactly where I thought he was. But we do know one thing about this team. Have run game and have defense. If that offensive line can hold up and Derrick Henry can at least do what he did last year, because a lot of people thought he had a down year, but it's a down year because he wasn't giving you 2,000 yards, but he still gave you 1,500 yards and double-digit touchdowns. And this defense led by Jeffrey Simmons, who got a new deal, this is something that they can do. I actually have them finishing second. I'm going to tell you exactly why. Three reasons why. Derrick Henry, Mike Vrabel, and Ryan Tannehill. All of them are in the final year of their contract. So all of them are playing for their next contract as well. And when you have players that are on contract years, we already know it's a depressed market for the running back position, but Derrick Henry is special. So perhaps he may fall out of that and maybe be able to get another contract someplace else. But this is the final year of that contract. We know he has the mileage on him from college to now, but another team who's on the cusp, wink, wink, Buffalo, or people feel is on the cusp, they can go and get a guy like that and bring him in next year. Mike Vrabel, great coach, rebuilt this team, had a tough team, has them already always ready to play. Great, I believe he's a great coach, to be honest with you, given the type of talent that he's had to deal with. So he's going to be on the market, so he wants to show and prove. And then you have Ryan Tannehill, who perhaps thinks he has another perhaps contract in them. Let's say Tampa Bay can't figure it out. They have a lot of talent down there, a wide receiver, and some things they could do. Perhaps he can find another 2 to 3 year deal before he becomes a permanent backup. So you have some key guys on prove it deals. As I said, Tannehill, Henry, and the coach. I think this is going to be a tough out. I don't think a lot of teams are going to be able to hang with the physicalness that they're going to bring, and they're going to beat some teams that perhaps most people didn't think they were going to beat, because these games are going to be close. And again, we talked about this one person as a fantasy note, but let's talk about him again. Let's pay attention to Okonkwo, the tight end, speedy tight end, kind of an unknown guy, but he could have a breakout season and be something that can be added to this offense. Treylon Burks, I don't know. DeAndre Hopkins, as you spoke about, health, as well as where is he now at the age of 30, going into 31, where is he now in his career, and can he revive it? Unfortunately, Tennessee has now been a place for a lot of these type of quarterbacks to go to proverbial be moved out to pasture. Let's hope he's not one of them. So this is a boom or bust type of situation, and I think they're kind of going to be in the middle. I wouldn't be surprised if they end up having 7 or 8 wins and end up second in this division.
Yeah, I've got real question marks about this team, Alex. I get all the points you're making, but the offensive line is where I'm going to start here because it's really shaky. Even after drafting Peter Skoronski from Northwestern and adding free agent Andre Dillard, I think that helps. But this O-line was terrible last year, and I still think it's a big question mark this year. You mentioned Treylon Burks and Chigozie Okonkwo at tight end. Those two pass catchers, they need to have a big season for this offense if they're going to have any success. Those are two guys that I am circling here. And with new offensive coordinator Tim Kelly, who was the team's passing game coordinator last year, I wonder what kind of wrinkles, what kind of changes we're going to see from the offense with him calling the plays. The defense is a big question mark too, though. Even though they've got guys like Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry, and, you know, they've got some players up front, but the secondary was really, really bad last year. Like, one of the worst units in the entire NFL. I think Derrick Henry is going to struggle behind that offensive line. I think age is catching up to Henry as well. I think Tannehill is going to struggle because of this O-line and because Henry not being as effective, the running game not being as effective as we've seen in years past. And I think we start to see the rebuild. I think this is a team at the trade deadline that's going to be a seller. I think they're going to be moving pieces and definitely giving a real look to either Will Levis or Malik Willis and looking to see if one of these guys could maybe be the future for them or if they need to go back to the well again, because I think they're going to be one of the 10 worst teams in the NFL. I think they finished third in this division with only 5 wins. So the only reason I have them finishing third is because of the Colts. And this is a team that obviously, if you've listened to these last few, I think they're finishing fourth in this division. Let's look at it from best case scenario for Indy. Is rookie quarterback Anthony Richardson looks like a bigger, more athletic Jalen Hurts, and they use him like Jalen Hurts in this Shane Steichen's offense. Jonathan Taylor looks like the guy he was back in 2021. Now, the offensive line needs to bounce back after a terrible season. Guys like Quentin Nelson, he's got to return to that all-pro form. And former all-pro, 3-time Pro Bowl center Ryan Kelly, he also had a down year last season. Those guys need to bounce back. This is kind of best case scenario. If the O-line can kind of get back to what we saw a couple years ago, and if Anthony Richardson can really be a threat, especially on the ground, maybe this team can really get something going here. Now, they drafted my favorite fourth round pick this year in the entire draft. Adetomiwa Adibare out of Northwestern. Love this kid. Absolute steal in the fourth round. Corner Julius Brents, and they added receiver Josh Downs, a guy who fell to the Colts in the third round. I think those guys should be year one contributors, could really help this team start the rebuild process.
The Colts I have finishing third simply because of Anthony Richardson, because I think he's going to pull out some games and win some games with his leg or some deep pass out of nowhere to Josh Downs, who's the speedy receiver who you mentioned previously. I did like their draft a little bit. You were talking about the fourth round. I like Blake Freeland in the fourth round as well to bolster that offensive line as well. I think he's a guy that's going to help this team. Now, back to Jonathan Taylor. We don't know when we're going to see Jonathan Taylor. Whether he's the Jonathan Taylor of last year or the Jonathan Taylor of 2021, he's a threat. And in this type of offense that Shane Steichen runs, if he brings anything like what he did with the Eagles here, that 1-2 punch of what they would have with Anthony Richardson and Jonathan Taylor, they would help each other out. The other part, I don't like their tight end. I thought they probably should have gone after someone perhaps in the offseason and brought in a little bit more of a more proven tight end. I know they drafted one in the fifth round. We'll have to see what he is. Anthony Richardson, as a Gator fan, there's a lot to be desired. The physical traits are there, so we don't need to talk about that. This is about him processing and being able to fully see the field all the way around. I think with a more balanced, actually a more running attack that they're going to have, more running approach they're going to have, I think we'll get a bounce back year from Ryan Kelly and Quentin Nelson that you mentioned. The one thing I do want to talk about that I think is going to be very interesting to watch be Quiddy Pay's third year. You have Grover Stewart. We know what DeForest Buckner is. And you have Samson Ikobam. I'm interested to see if they can get some pressure here, because although I like Shaq Leonard and he's been a very good linebacker, he's been hurt the last 2 years. So we don't know if he's going to be the guy that we saw 3 years ago, if he's 2 years removed from an injury. Hopefully he can bounce back and be something. But if that defensive line can get some pressure and be strong up front, and you're going with more of a running attack and maybe hitting Josh Downs down the field and Michael Pittman, who's more of a possession receiver. And let's not forget Alec Pearson, how he came on towards the end of the season. There's a little bit of a spark that is around the Colts, and it's really on Shane Steichen to see what he can pull from Anthony Richardson. And when Jonathan Taylor returns, is he all in? Is he invested and can give? He doesn't have to return to what he was in 2021, but if he can give you what he gave you, let's just say his rookie season, along with Anthony Richardson, that's a formidable offense that's going to be a problem for teams to deal with, which is why I have them finishing third with about maybe five to six wins.
Yeah, I've got about 5 wins as well. I think them and the Titans are going to be battling for that 3rd and 4th place spot. I like what you said about Shaq Leonard. He's a guy that just needs to stay healthy. He's a game changer when he's on the field. Kwity Paye is also a guy that I circled, Alex. He needs to finally take that jump this year and play like a guy who went in the first round. We just haven't seen enough from him. But the front 7, I think, could be really good if healthy. Now, the secondary, on the other hand, is really lacking playmakers, and I think it's a big hole for this team. Wide range of potential outcomes for this team. They've got talent at spots, but they've also got some big question marks at others. Now, the Colts have one of the easiest schedules in the NFL, and that definitely helps. But you've got a rookie coach and a rookie quarterback in what could be a bad O-line, because last year they were one of the worst in the league. It's a big question mark if they can bounce back. I think it's going to be tough for them. I do like some of the moves they've made as far as trying to build this team up. They've got some pieces I like, but I think it's a tough road ahead. I'm with you. I think it's about 5 wins. I got them finishing 4th. But if you're a Colts fan, you're just hoping to see something from this young quarterback and some of these playmakers. All right, let's jump to the NFC South. I want to start with the New Orleans Saints. A lot of what the Saints can be this year is going to hinge on Derek Carr and what he brings to the table. That was the big move, obviously, for them. Now, the reports that I'm reading are saying that he's going to have a lot more control of things when it comes to this offense. But here's what I'm looking at, Alex. Derek Carr is 32. Demario Davis, 34. Michael Thomas, 30. Alvin Kamara, 28. Cam Jordan, 34. Tyrann Mathieu, 30. I could easily make the case that their best football is behind all of these guys. Michael Thomas is 4 years removed from his best season. Him and Kamara both have dealt with injuries in recent seasons, and Kamara is serving a 3-game suspension to start the year. Marshawn Lattimore missed most of last season with an injury. Can he get back to an elite level at cornerback? I don't know, maybe. Now, Chris Olave, the rookie from last year, had a very good rookie year. He's kind of the lone bright spot of youth for this team. I like their rookies, Brian Brisee, first rounder out of Clemson, Isaiah Foskey, second rounder out of Notre Dame. So they've got some young guys that maybe can help here. But there's a lot of guys that are just past their prime that they're going to be leaning on to be contributors for this Saints team.
So, Brad, you mentioned a lot of what I was going to talk about. So let's just go right here. Derek Carr, a lot is going to ride on his leadership and seeing if he can take this team to the next level, meaning get them in the playoff run, because clearly this is another week that we just talked about the AFC South. The NFC South is also a toss-up where truly probably any team can win if any team were decided to get hot. Now, Derek Carr, as a Raiders fan, he was not a leader on our team. He was a solid, decent quarterback. At any point in time, he could be between the 10th best and the 16th best quarterback at times. But what we'll say here about what he has that he didn't necessarily have when he was with the Raiders, he's going to have his best offensive line and he's going to have his best defensive in terms of the group and what they've been able to maintain over, let's say, the past 3 seasons as being a top 12 defense. Those are 2 things that he did not have and never had while he was with the Raiders. So we're going to be able to see what he can do with that. Now, you talked about Michael Thomas. I know we've talked off air. You've heard me bang the table and stop talking to me about Michael Thomas. You have not seen that guy since 2019. It's 2023. So I don't know who he is. Chris Olave, as you mentioned, looks very promising. Another weapon I want to mention that I've been hearing a lot about, especially from down in New Orleans, Juwan Johnson. I'm interested to see what that is. Foster Moreau, who I thought was a decent, when he was also a former Raider. When he was with us, he's a guy that did get open but did have a little bit of the drops, but he is coming back. I believe he had a medical issue last year, if I'm not mistaken, cancer, and he's coming back from that. And then out of nowhere, here comes Jimmy Graham. So who knows what that team is going to look like. But the key thing you also mentioned was, what is this running game going to look like? With Alvin Kamara out, they did draft Keandre Miller in the 3rd round, but they did bring in Jamal Williams, who's more of a smash mouth, straight ahead runner. And that's not something that they've had in terms of their lead back in New Orleans for a while. The defense, they are aging, but I believe they have enough to be another top 12, top 15 defense, enough to get some things done. But the thing that I want to go to most about this, coaching. I don't like the Saints coaching. I don't like Pete Carmichael. You know, they have a another defensive coordinator in Ryan Nielsen, but we know that Dennis Allen is on that defense. He was the defensive coordinator, so I think he can still help a lot of those guys out in terms of what they need to do over there. But I don't like the game that Pete Carmichael has been calling since Sean Payton left. So I think there's going to be a lot to be desired. I don't think they have the weapons that people love to talk about. They talk about them in terms of paper instead of what they've actually been able to produce. It's really just Chris Olave right now as the one true thing that you know you have on that team that we'll have to see. And then again, without the leadership of a strong quarterback, in which Derek Carr is not, I don't know on that offensive side of the ball specifically who's going to be the standout that's going to rally the troops to try and do some things. I'm rooting for Derek Carr because I thought he was ill-treated in Oakland/Vegas. So I do have a rooting interest for him, but I don't have the Saints. I'm looking at the Saints. They should be maybe tied for second or maybe fall to third, depending on how the division shakes out. But I look at them as a second or third team in this division. I don't think they're going to be as walking as tall as people have them walking.
Yeah, I think we align on this one, Alex. I'm with you. And everyone's talking about their easy schedule, but they're going to be tested out of the gate with a big road stretch. They only have 3 home games in their first 8 weeks. So that's going to be a tough start to the season. And it's going to be interesting to see if they start to fall behind here early, if they can play catch up. Now, Derek Carr, he is a big upgrade at quarterback. I get that, but I'm not sure it's enough. He was really inconsistent his last 2 years in Vegas, throwing 28 picks, only 47 touchdowns. I don't believe in Dennis Allen either, not for a second. He's not a head coach in this league. He's a coordinator. I haven't seen anything that tells me otherwise. I don't like the staff. And like I mentioned here, I just think they have too many players past their prime that they're going to have to lean on. I think this team underachieves. Everyone is picking them to win this division. I don't see it. I think they underachieve. I think they're a 7-win team, and they finished 3rd in a bad division. All right, let's jump to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Best case scenario for Tampa Bay. Let's say Baker Mayfield looks like he did the year he helped lead the Browns to the playoffs. The offensive line bounces back after a lot of key injuries, and key guys were hurt last year on that O-line. And some of their young guys and rookies can make an impact, especially defensive tackle Kalijah Kancey. That's really best case scenario for them. But this team is in rebuild mode. We know that. Last season, Rashad White had almost 500 yards rushing. They need to commit to running the ball and make him the feature back. I think we're going to see more of that this year. I think the front 7 is still pretty good. Kalijah Kancey, Yaya Diaby, Shaq Barrett is healthy and looks like he's ready to go. Joe Tryon, he looks like a guy that maybe could be a breakout player this year in that front 7. Devin White is a guy who can still get after the quarterback. Vita Vea, pair him up with Kancey. I think they're going to be able to push the pocket. There's some things to like on this Bucs team, but this is a team still with a lot of holes.
You nailed it. You gave the best, case scenario, and I don't think any of those scenarios are going to come true. I don't believe Baker's going to bounce back or anything of that. I believe we know who Baker is in this league. He's shown us. He's had several opportunities, but he was there for 4 years in Cleveland's system. He did have 1 year of full success. And you know what they were doing that year? They had, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt going crazy. They had probably the best offensive line in the system. And they also had one heck of a defense that in terms of what was going on out there. But he has the wide receivers. Perhaps, maybe, we don't know what's going on with Mike Evans right now because we saw those reports. I don't know what's going on with Mike Evans right now. For all I know, he could get traded tomorrow. There's something brewing there with Mike Evans. I don't believe he's going to be dialed in. They did lose Russell Gage. We're talking about the offensive line. Perhaps they have a bounce back season. But offensively, we can really talk about what was really the issue in terms of having Tom Brady back there. The number one issue with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they could not run the ball. And this year, they are still not going to be able to run the ball. They average a putrid 76 yards game in terms of rushing. Rashid White is not a guy. Hopefully, he can get better. But I don't believe he's a guy. And they didn't bring in anyone. I know they have Chase Edmonds. So that offense is going to be putrid if you're relying on the arm of Baker Mayfield. Oh, by the way, do we know if it's healthy or not? I don't know. It's a question mark. You talked about the defense. Let's say if, Kalijah Kancey, Vita Vea, and Shaq Barrett can bounce back and they can get back that pressure that they were getting before when Shaq Barrett was having that awesome year. We don't know Lavonte David and Devin White getting a little bit longer tooth with Lavonte David, so we see he can do there. I do like their defensive backfield with Carlton Davis, Ryan Neal, and Antoine Winfield Jr. and Jamel Dean. That's a strong bunch that they have, so maybe the back can help out the front. The way this offense is set up, the way that I believe we know what Baker Mayfield is, I have Tampa Bay finishing last and perhaps being in the Caleb Williams chase.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the secondary because I really like some of those guys too. Antoine Winfield Jr., really good young player. Jamel Dean at corner is maybe one of the most underrated cornerbacks in the league. I think he got robbed of a Pro Bowl last year. I thought he had a really nice season. They've got some pieces. I think the defense is going to have to be really good, but I just don't think it's enough. And I'm with you. I think they've got some talented guys still on this roster, but it's clearly a rebuild year. I don't believe in Baker for 1 second. I don't think he has any type of bounce back. I was just pointing out maybe best case scenario, but I don't see it either. I don't think it happens for Tampa Bay this year. I think this year is going to be a focusing on developing the young guys and trying to identify which ones are going to be building blocks for this team going forward. Even with potentially Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, it's not enough for Baker to have a big season and have success here. I've got this team winning 4 games, and they're going to be a top 10 pick in April. Let's jump to the Atlanta Falcons, Alex. This is an interesting team here because the Falcons' decision to not select a quarterback in the 2023 NFL draft or go after one in free agency, I think it really shows that they have a lot of confidence in Desmond Ridder, and they want to find out what kind of quarterback they have with this guy. He can make or break the Falcons this year. Now, I'm not a fan of taking running backs early in the draft as they did with Bijan Robinson, but we know how talented this guy is. He's a legit rookie of the year type of player with Kyle Pitts, Drake London. You've got two big playmakers, two guys that can really stretch the field for a guy like Ridder. And I think with a strong running game with those two good young backs, this is a team that was third in rushing last season. I think they should be even better this year running the ball. The passing game was 31st, though. So they have to make a big jump on that side of the ball, and it's going to come back to Desmond Ridder and being able to get the ball to these playmakers. Now, Ridder did show some promise after he took over in the second half of the year for Marcus Mariota. Can he continue it into this season?
The Falcons are a very interesting team right now. I wavered a lot on where I thought they would be, but this is the team that I have actually winning the South. I think we're going to get a breakout year from Drake London, and I believe we're going to get another breakout year from Kyle Pitts. And what I mean by that is he's going to finally get old because he only scored one touchdown his rookie year. He had the 1,000 yards, but he was hurt last year. But this year, he's got to get the ball. They've got to get him. The Arthur Smith has to figure out how to get this gentleman the ball in the end zone. You cannot have another guy similar to what you had with Julio Jones, where you had all this great production between the 20s, but you can never get him the ball in the end zone. You have to get him into the end zone. Enter Bijan Robinson. This is where I think they're going to do a lot of their damage. They strengthen that offensive line, especially the interior with Matthew Bergeron. You have Bijan Robinson. You have Tyler Algiers. And oh, yeah, by the way, you still have Cordarrelle Patterson, the all-Swiss Army knife that you have in that backfield. Tyler Algiers came out of nowhere as a fifth-round pick, had 1,000 yards, and wasn't even a starter till about maybe the fifth or sixth game when Cordarrelle Patterson got hurt. So you have two capable backs, a dynamic one and a solid one in Tyler Algiers. This is going to be a very interesting and very strong offense that I think is going to do a lot of damage, and they're going to beat you up front, and they're going to run the ball, and I think we're going to see a quote-unquote touchdown breakout year from Kyle Pitts. On to the defense. They did draft Bijan Robinson. I thought that they should have gone in the cornerback direction to pair it up with A.J. Terrell, who's a budding top five DB in the league. Imagine if it was Christian Gonzalez or Devin Witherspoon in that backfield with him to team up with Richie Grant and Jesse Bates. That would help out that front four in terms of getting a pass rush. But what they did, they went and got Bijan Robinson, so we'll settle with that. But instead, they bolstered the defensive line by getting stalwart Calais Campbell. I feel like Calais Campbell's been in this league for 50 years. They also brought in David Onyemata as well to go next to now. Grady Jarrett finally has somebody next to him that can help take the pressure off of him. Because as we know, we saw in that Tampa Bay game, they won that game, if not for a bad call by the refs. And they also brought in Bud Dupree. So hopefully he can, he still has something in the tank. I know he's been injured a little bit, but there's a little bit left in the tank. I do worry about their interior linebackers in this 4-3, excuse me, in this 3-4 setup, to see if they can be strong enough to stop the run. But I do like what they have in Calais Campbell, Grady Jarrett, and David Onyema up front. And I like their defensive backfield. I did not like bringing in Jeff Okuda. He's been too oft injured, and he's also injured again. And they do not have a lot of depth back there. Given that he's off injured, you're going to have to take your time with him. So, but I still have them finishing because of that strong running game, because of that solid offensive line, and having Drake London and Kyle Pitts. I have this team surprising and finishing first. I don't believe by the end of the season we'll know what Desmond Ridder is, but even if they do falter a little bit with Desmond Ridder, they do have a solid backup in Taylor Heinicke, as we know what he did in Washington. But I have the Falcons coming in first this year.
Yeah, this is a team that I think should be competitive. I just think they've got some serious holes. The pass rush was a big, big issue last year. They only had 21 sacks as a team. I mean, they just could not put pressure on quarterbacks. You mentioned they added guys like Calais Campbell. Probably not the player he was a couple years ago, but it's an improvement up front. Bud Dupree, you mentioned how much gas is left in the tank, but he should at least help the pass rush. Jesse Bates was a really solid pickup. Jeff Okuda, I don't know what he's going to bring to the table for the secondary. Atlanta, with the secondary, they essentially turned over their entire secondary. They only kept A.J. Terrell and Richie Grant as their starters from last year. And with guys like A.J. Terrell, Grady Jarrett, they've got a couple high-level guys, but I don't trust this defense at all. I don't think it's a very good group at all. I think it's going to be one of the worst defenses in the league. The offense has a lot of potential, though. It's going to come down to, can the defense get better? And can Desmond Ridder take that step forward and make them a legit passing threat? Because if their defense finishes where it did last year, and if their passing attack finishes where it did last year, which is both towards the very bottom of the league, then this team is not going to be that competitive. But I like the offensive weapons. I like some of the moves they've made to build this team. Still a lot of question marks, but I've got them finishing second in the division. And I think it's close. I think this could go either way. It would not shock me if they won this division. I've got them winning 8 games, finishing second, and being right in the thick of things, though, because of some of those things that we mentioned. The offense, the running game, and some of their key players, I think that could keep them in a lot of games. All right, let's finish up here with the Carolina Panthers. Perfect place to finish because, as we know, they had the number one pick in the draft, and they're starting fresh here with new head coach Frank Reich and Bryce Young, of course, at quarterback, playing in one of the NFL's weakest divisions. We kind of went through this division. It's pretty wide open here. Now, the Panthers began last season 1-4 under Matt Rhule before they went 6-6 under interim head coach Steve Wilks. So we definitely saw a turnaround from them after moving on from Matt Rhule. Now, trading DJ Moore to Chicago, I think it was absolutely necessary in order for them to land the top pick. But with that being said, I think it leaves them without a true X wide receiver. That's going to be an issue for this offense. But Bryce Young clearly has to be an upgrade over what we saw last year with Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, and PJ Walker. They just couldn't get anything from that position. I think he comes in, even as a rookie, and stabilizes the most important position on the field.
Yeah, and I know you have them finishing first. You know what? And I will say, I was very high on them, but as we move through preseason and OTAs, I bumped them down some because I liked a lot what I saw from Atlanta. So I bumped them down to that 2-3 battling it out with New Orleans. I have them coming in second. And the number one reason why is I don't like their weapons. I don't like Chark. Mingo is a rookie, so he's going to be something that we're going to have to figure out what it is. And then they have a veteran, Adam Thielen, who's going to be able to teach a lot of these guys. Perhaps he can help Terrence Marshall and Laviska Shenault, who looked very good in Jacksonville as rookie. I'm not sure how he fell off and fell out of favor. However, Chark is oft injured, so he's not going to play a whole season. In fact, he's injured right now. So we're going to see Terrence Marshall, who's in his second year and was part of that LSU team with Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson. He was another receiver on that team that was a very good receiver, but he hasn't taken that next step in this league where I thought he should be a starter. Instead, he's now second string. Again, I always talked about Laviska Shenault, who I think is good. But those guys are tall. They're big. They can do some things. Jonathan Mingo, promising rookie. We'll have to see. I thought the offensive line was good, but as we looked at them and saw them in preseason, they looked a little bit weak. Now, I won't hold too much against what we saw with the Jets. They're just a dominant defense. But as that, it still didn't look like they were in sync, and they had a lot of time. So hopefully Frank Reich can get them on schedule. And I do like Hayden Hurst there and Ian Thomas as their two tight ends. Again, tight end best friend to a quarterback. So I think that we'll see a lot more, maybe a lot more sets in terms of two tight end sets. And with those two tight ends out there, getting the ball out of his hands quick until that offensive line can learn to gel and do some things. Miles Sanders, as long as he can stay healthy, along with Chuba Hubbard, I think they have a nice running back room. Frank Reich, we know what he was as a quarterback coach and an offensive coordinator, so I believe he'll be able to help develop Bryce Young, and we'll be able to see a few things, but I just don't think they're ready to have that leap right away in his first year. Now, the defense, I think the defense is solid all the way around. You talked about Frankie Louvu as one of your guys that a lot of people aren't paying attention to. Brian Burns, I know there's a little bit of a dust up there about his contract and what they're going to do. Derek Brown. They have J.C. Horn, Dante Jackson, Jeremy Chin, and they also brought in Von Bell, and they have Xavier Woods. So there's a lot that they have on that defense that's going to help keep them in games and make it hard for teams to play against them. But I just don't think they have enough on offense. By the time this offense catches on, I think they're just going to be struggling all season long to find fluidity and start to gel. I think it'll be a little bit too late, and I think other teams will have moved ahead of them where they won't be able to catch first place. I think they'll be a game out of first place. I don't think they'll fall out, but I think they'll end up catching fire late and maybe make a run, but I think they'll just fall a game or two short for where Atlanta will be.
Alex, we definitely saw this very similarly because off air, we had talked a lot about Carolina, and they were the team that I've basically said off the air was a team that I picked to win this division. I'm going to stick with that pick, but I don't feel as confident about them winning this division as I did before the preseason. And the big reason why, and you mentioned it, was the offensive line, because on paper, I thought this offensive line was going to be pretty good. I actually thought it was going to be one of the strengths of this team. And they've looked a little shaky. Now, can they gel? Can they put it together? Maybe. Maybe they'll be better than what they've looked like. So I don't want to jump to conclusions too much here. Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard, I'm with you. That makes a really nice running back combo. If the O-line can gel, I think that could really be something they could lean on this year, is a running game in that defense, because I love this young defense. You mentioned it. Derek Brown, Brian Burns, Shaq Thompson, and Frankie Louvu might be the most underrated linebacker duo in the entire NFL. J.C. Horn is a guy that, if he can stay healthy, has huge, huge upside. Dante Jackson, Jeremy Chin, and Von Bell over at safety. You hit on all these guys, but they don't really have any holes. This defense, I think, is going to be a top 10 defense this year. I think they're going to be really, really good. If they can run the ball and have a top 10 level defense, if Bryce Young just moves the chains enough, I think this team is going to be the surprise team in the NFC South. I don't think they're going to be great, because I don't think any team in this division is great. But I've got them winning 9 games and just beating out Atlanta for the number one spot. Guys, that is going to do it for today's episode, though. I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.